Resurrected Republic Truth Radio Broadcast on RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth. Resurrected Republic Truth Radio Broadcast today. We're going to be covering some interesting subject matter. Tomorrow we're going to be covering Ammon Bundy and his presentation in Northern California, where he reveals about the environmentalists who are threatening to tear out five dams. But today, the cultural Marxist transgender movement infiltration into American education. Oh, how disturbing things are. We're going to start off by talking about a article that came out in Natural News. Virginia School Board actually considering new curriculum that teaches kids there is no such thing as biological sex. Yes, I'm not making this up. Oh, good Lord. I just, you know, it keeps getting worse and worse. Left-wing social engineers have for decades been working to overturn traditional American political cultural norms and more within the nation public school systems and institutions of higher learning. Now they're aiming to overturn accepted provable scientific norms as well. As reported by the WorldNet Daily, the Fairfax County School Board in Northern Virginia is considering the adoption of a new curriculum that teaches grade school children there is no biological sex and that the clergy cannot be trusted to address the issue if kids have questions about it. Now, this just raises all kinds of interesting issues as far as the non-advocation of a religion. This becomes a religion because it becomes an anti-religion. Therefore, there is no argument now they have. We've been trying to say this for a long time, that this is the new secular religion. When you become an anti-religion, you and adopt all kinds of interesting fundamentals, then you become a religion yourself. So is our tax dollars going to pay for fake information to be taught to our kids? So the new curriculum was first identified by the Family Research Council, which we've been following for a while, which published a news release describing it. So the Family Research Council says Fairfax County School Board to teach kids biological sex is meaningless. It's poised to make some radical changes to their sex ed curriculum. Already in each public school, student must suffer through 80 hours of sex ed. It's public school. It's not a typo. 80. They call it family life education, but everybody knows that's a joke. You won't find lessons on building happy marriages and healthy families here. No, instead you'll find hour after hour of instruction on your evolving sexual identity, on the proper handling of contraceptive drugs and devices, and on how to give constant consent for sex. Here's a balanced review of every sex ed lesson. But even these lessons were too repressive for kids in the eyes of this longtime Democrat-controlled school board. Last week at the Fairfax County School Board meeting, the committee of handpicked sex ed advisors pitched an overhaul of the curriculum, which will take things from bad to worse. A summary of the changes drafted by the Family Life Education Curriculum Advisory Committee, or FLECAC, can be found. Also, we'll leave in the description. But don't ever trust the school board summaries. Click on the board documents link for the full report and skip to the final three pages, especially to read the dissenting opinion. The vast majority of the 24 voting members, including a ninth grade student, embraces, voted enthusiastically for all changes. Only three members voted against the changes. Here's what the officials want to do. One, teach Fairfax kids they weren't actually born male or female. Advisors scrubbed biological sex from all lessons and in its place put the politically charged gender-fluid propaganda term. This is a progressive, completely progressive ideology. There is no center ground on this. So this propaganda term of sex assigned at birth because of patriarchal cultural norms. As one advisor explained, biological sex is meaningless. Good God, the nitwittery. Number two, teach 7th and 8th grade students to embrace transgender identity, but don't tell them about the risks. Advisors voted against telling children about any of the health risks and side effects from gender transitioning. Number three, teach the daily drug regimen of pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP, to every high school student every year. PrEP is designed for people at very high risk of contracting HIV, defined by the Centers for Disease Control as men who have sex with men without condoms. Leading AIDS experts have said that PrEP will lead to a public health catastrophe for encouraging risky sex, and PrEP has not even been approved by the FDA for use by children under 18. Number four, stop telling students that abstinence is the only 100% effective method to prevent sexually transmitted infections. You can't make this stuff up. Advisors mocked abstinence education, then voted to take out this phrase. Five, teach students how to use every imaginable contraceptive drug, device, and cream, but don't tell them about the health risks or side effects. Six, strip parents of their right to opt out their kids from an eighth grade lesson on dating and family. The Fairfax School Board thrusts all of these lessons on kids unless their parents affirmatively tell them to stop. Seven, remove an offensive word. The sex ed advisors have finally identified a word that was too offensive for students to hear. They voted to strip the word clergy from the list of trusted adults that students might consult with sexual identity concerns. The school board is accepting public comments until June 8th on the proposed changes. They will vote on the changes at a school board meeting on June 14th. Oh, God. So this program named, misnamed, Family Life Education, but as the Family Research Council reports, there aren't any lessons about how to enter into a lasting, happy marriage and raise healthy, well-rounded children. Rather, the curriculum is jam-packed with hours of sessions about children's evolving sexual identity. This is just insane. This is insanity codified. You know, these people just won't stop until they cause such a backlash. You know, as my wife is illustrated time and time again, parents, you better know what you're signing when you enroll your kids into school. Me personally, I wouldn't sign anything. I wouldn't sign any releases. I wouldn't sign any acknowledgments. I wouldn't sign anything at all. I reserve my right to prevent my child from being abused with this insanity. But, you know, I'll probably have her talk more to you guys about that. In addition, the Fairfax County Board's curriculum aimed at 7th and 8th grade students, as it seems, to have them embrace transgender identity without telling them about the risks, Ruse adds. Advisors voted against telling the children about these health effects. You know, this is happening all over, folks. This is happening, and parents are starting to rise up in response to this, but they need to know what to do about it. But anyway, let's cover a little bit more of this stuff. Okay, as a shining example to this insanity, from New Day Films comes a clip on creating gender-inclusive schools. Now, keep in mind, these kids are very small kids. I believe they're in maybe third or fourth grade, maybe fifth at the most. I don't know. But these are little kids, impressionable kids. So check this out.
Some people think, oh, boys should only do this, and girls should only do that, or girls should think this, and boys should think that. It's not true.
And I told my dad I want some purple skinny jeans. He was like, are you crazy?
My closet was literally pink, and now it's almost all blues, blacks, and browns.
But remember that gender is not binary, right?
There's a spectrum.
We've been discussing...
Gender is not binary, this teacher says. And a student puppets back. Oh my God. You know, if this was my kid in this class, I would be insanely furious. So this is a political agenda. It's an obviously very, very far left political progressive agenda being taught to all of these students. Shouldn't be taught to any of them. If their parents want to teach them this insanity, let their parents teach them this. This is not what school is for. But anyway, I digress.
Seeing a lot of the gender issues in class. And to be honest, I didn't know what to expect.
Some of them seemed to be really thinking about it.
I think it had never occurred to him that you could look at the world this way, that you could take off these labels.
Turns out that they couldn't stop talking.
I like to wear sneakers, jeans, and I don't like dolls. I hate the color pink.
It doesn't matter what gender you are. It matters what kind of person you are.
It says here that she is too weak to stand up for herself. Are you too weak to stand up for yourself?
No.
If I give you a marker, I want you to look at that color of marker and think to yourself, is this a boy color?
Yes.
Or is this a girl color? Or could this be both?
I thought that it was different, like you should dress like a girl if you're a girl, but I don't think that anymore.
No, she doesn't think that anymore because she's been indoctrinated by these progressives. These little kids. They're not learning that, you know, the strong family unit is the pathway to success. No, they're learning that they can all be gender fluid if they want, which brings a great amount of attention, especially heaped on them by these progressives that give them all these accolades. And you wonder why these kids end up changing their minds like kids change a T-shirt.
Man, if you're a boy and you can dance, stand up. Everybody can dance. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I like doing things that boys like doing, like climbing trees and making paper airplanes.
It's okay to be what you want to be.
I was born as a girl, and then on the inside, I feel in the middle.
Think about your own.
Jesus.
Think about what it brings up for you. Think about what you want for your children in the classroom. You'd be surprised.
Think about what you want for your children. So my question to that nutcase is what if you don't want any of this for your children? Oh, that makes you a bigot hater? This is the problem.
Classroom.
You'd be surprised at how open-minded parents are, and even more so, how welcoming children are to learning about this.
Yeah, they're welcoming to this because they're impressionable. They're children. That's the entire point. You know what Stalin said about that?
Kids embracing each other, loving each other. And that's the kind of community that we want to foster and model for the world.
This is the kind of community that they want to foster and model for the world. You hear what they're saying? Very telling. This is what they want to foster for the community and the world. First of all, my kids aren't part of your community. They're mine. They're mine to raise. They're mine to be responsible for. They're mine to teach certain things that the school, being reading, writing, and arithmetic. So here's the problem with government-mandated schools in and of themselves. They just, in today's progressive era, this is what you have, folks. This is insane, absolutely insane. And this is happening everywhere. Check out this news clip.
Parents are not happy with the Rockland Charter School Academy for having transgender discussions in a kindergarten class.
And these parents feel betrayed by the school district that they were not notified.
Those discussions were earlier this summer during the last few days of the academic school year.
CBS 13 Sharin Merger joins us live from Rockland, where a school board meeting just wrapped up. Sharin.
Sam and Adrian, it was quite an emotional board meeting at Rockland Academy tonight, and it was standing room only, with parents and teachers speaking out tonight about a teacher who read books to her kindergartner class. And also, during that time, that kindergartner was going through a transition in front of her peers, and tonight that teacher spoke out.
And what I will share over and over again is how proud I was of my students.
An emotional Rockland Academy teacher addressing a packed house of parents, many furious about her decision to discuss the topic of gender identity inside her kindergarten class.
It was never my intent to harm any students, only to support them through a difficult situation.
The teacher defended her actions to read two books she says were given to her by a transgender child going through a transition.
The kindergartners came home very confused about whether or not you can pick your gender, whether or not they really were a boy or a girl.
Parents say besides the books, the transgender student at some point during class also changed clothes and was revealed as her true gender. And many parents say they feel betrayed and blindsided.
I want her to hear from me as a parent what her gender identity means to her and to our family. Not from a book that may be controversial. My daughter went home crying, shaking, so afraid that she could turn into a boy.
The issue was not on the agenda, so parents spoke out during Monday night's public comment.
It's really about the parents being informed and involved and, you know, giving us the choice and the rights about, you know, what's getting introduced to our kids and at what age.
Many teachers also speaking out in support of what transpired inside the classroom on the last days of the academic year.
Head in the direction of banned books or book lists or selected literature that should only be read inside or outside of the classroom. I think that that's a very dangerous direction to go.
No, see, this is what these progressive communist Marxist mind-melted people don't get. And I'm not a fan of Adolf Hitler. Do you know what books were being burned in Germany? Do you know what caused that? This. What you're hearing right now. It was Marxist literature that caused the book burnings in Germany. Is that what we want? You see, because when these ideologues push us to the point where we have no more room to be pushed, it will cause the need for a rise of an authoritarian force to knock them back. This is Hegelian dialectics, and these nitwits are useful idiots. Just like the feminists, these people have no idea what they're doing. So, when I try and explain to people that this is a Marxist or cultural Marxist ideology that's permeating their brains, I take that from sources such as ex-KGB defectors who have tried to tell us, matter of fact, tried to tell us very long ago. This gentleman, Yuri Brezhmanov, illustrates this perfectly in a clip with G. Edward Griffin, who's been on our show, Red Pill University founder. So let's hear what Yuri Brezhmanov has to say. Now, this is geared more towards Marxist feminists, but transgenderism, feminism, this is all cultural Marxism, especially the third wave variety. So check this out.
Well, you spoke several times before about ideological subversion. That is a phrase that I'm afraid some Americans don't fully understand. When the Soviets use the phrase ideological subversion, what do they mean by it?
Ideological subversion is the process which is legitimate, overt, and open. You can see it with your own eyes. All you have to do, all American mass media has to do, is to unplug their bananas from their ears, open up their eyes, and they can see it. There is no mystery. There is nothing to do with espionage. I know that espionage intelligence gathering looks more romantic. It sells more deodorants through the advertising, probably. That's why your Hollywood producers are so crazy about James Bond type of thrillers. But in reality, the main emphasis of the KGB is not in the area of intelligence at all. According to my opinion, and opinion of many defectors of my caliber, only about 15% of time, money, and manpower is spent on espionage as such. The other 85% is a slow process which we call either ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interest of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process which goes very slow, and it's divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. It takes from 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation. Why that many years? Because this is the minimum number of years which requires to educate one generation of students in the country of your enemy, exposed to the ideology of the enemy. In other words, Marxism-Leninism ideology is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations of American students without being challenged or counterbalanced by the basic values of Americanism, American patriotism. The result you can see, most of the people who graduated in the 60s, dropouts or half-baked intellectuals, are now occupying the positions of power in the government, civil service, business, mass media, educational system. You are stuck with them. You cannot get rid of them. They are contaminated. They are programmed to think and react to certain stimuli in a certain pattern. You cannot change their mind, even if you expose them to authentic information, even if you prove that white is white and black is black, you still cannot change the basic perception and the logic of behavior. In other words,
do you hear what he's saying? He's basically saying, you could tell them that white is white, black is black, boy is boy, girl is girl, and they will not agree with you because they have been ideologically subverted. Their minds have been brainwashed by ideological subversion. We talk about Russian collusion, and those screaming the loudest about Russian collusion are themselves the victims of Marxist-Leninist brainwashing.
These people, the process of demoralization is complete and irreversible. To get rid society of these people, you need another 20 or 15 years to educate a new generation of patriotically minded and common sense people who would be acting in favor and in the interests of the United States society.
And as Mr. Bresmanoff was just saying there, the need for traditional education, this is not a right left wing thing at this point. This is a survival of the tenets and the foundation of Western society and of the Republic itself. And don't take, you know, my word that transgender politics is a Marxist socialist concept. Let's go to isj.org.uk, International Socialism website. Marxism, Feminism, and Transgender Politics by Sue Caldwell. Now, of course, as a leftist, she's not going to really delve into the indoctrination. Well, she does mention it further down here that she claims that people in the right wing tend to make this assumption, this claim, that they're indoctrinating our children. And that's exactly what they're doing, because it's against our will. It's not what we want our kids to learn. So, I mean, it's, you can see just by their own admission, they're identifying transgenderism with Marxist politics. So this isn't just us. And Marxism is a subversion of the American Republic and the ideals that, you know, this country was founded on. So just so you know.
And yet these people who've been programmed and, as you say, in place, and
yes,
who are favorable to an opening with the Soviet concept, mm-hmm, these are the very people who would be marked for extermination in this country?
Most of them, yes. Mm-hmm. Simply because the psychological shock when they will see in future what the beautiful society of equality and social justice means in practice, obviously they will revolt. They will be very unhappy, frustrated people. And the Marxist-Leninist regime does not tolerate these people. They will join the links of dissenters, mm-hmm. dissidents. Unlike in present United States, there will be no place for dissent in future Marxist-Leninist America. Here you can get popular like Daniel Ellsberg and filthy rich like Jane Fonda for being dissident, for criticizing your Pentagon. In future, these people will be simply squashed like cockroaches. Nobody is going to pay them nothing for their beautiful, noble ideas of equality. This they don't understand, and it will be the greatest shock for them, of course. The demoralization process in the United States is basically completed already. For the last 25 years, actually it's overfulfilled, because demoralization now reaches such areas where previously not even Comrade Andropov and all his experts would even dream of such a tremendous success. Most of it is done by Americans to Americans, thanks to lack of moral standards. As I mentioned before, exposure to true information does not matter anymore. A person who was demoralized is unable to assess true information. The facts tell nothing to him. Even if I shower him with information, with authentic proof, with documents, with pictures, even if I take him by force to the Soviet Union and show him concentration camp, he will refuse to believe it until he is going to receive a kick in his fat bottom. When a military boot crashes his balls, then he will understand, but not before that. That's the tragic of the situation of demoralization. So basically America is stuck with demoralization, and unless, even if you start right now, here, this minute, you start educating new generation of Americans, it will still take you 15 to 20 years to turn the tide of ideological perception of reality back to normalcy and patriotism.
Before we continue on with Yuri Bresmanov and what he has to say about these subverters of American culture, I wanted to share with you on, you know, what really is cultural Marxism. Now, we've discussed this before, but it's important to understand exactly what you're fighting against, and then you'll be able to see it, even in doctors and intellectuals and educators and teachers. It's important to know and be able to identify what cultural Marxism is and why it's so dangerous for America.
Let us begin with a very terse description. Cultural Marxism is a broad term which refers to the advocacy and application of critical theory, and more generally to the cultural, political, and academic influence of certain elements within the contemporary left. The roots of cultural Marxism are to be found in what is commonly known as the Frankfurt School. The term arose informally to describe the thinkers affiliated or merely associated with the Frankfurt Institute for Social Research at the Goethe University in Frankfurt, Germany during the interwar period. Critical of both capitalism and Soviet socialism, they sought to address the perceived shortcomings of classical Marxism in the pursuit of societal change. Their work came to be referred to as critical theory. Defining or categorizing critical theory is exceptionally difficult, for it pertains to a broad, almost disparate set of ideas, individuals, and approaches. The underlying and enduring aspect of critical theory, common to all its offshoots, nonetheless, is the creation of interdisciplinary theories that might serve as instruments of social transformation.
We'll be right back. Resurrected Republic Truth Radio broadcast.
This is the most transparent administration in history. You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Mother of the moon, which fills my sails, close the sea of tears, with no provision.
During the 1960s, the Frankfurt School critical theory gained traction with some segments of the left wing and leftist thought in both Europe and North America. Today, its influence is felt throughout Western academia, dominating the social sciences and humanities, gender studies and whiteness studies being two such examples. One of the most influential critical theorists and an original member of the Frankfurt School was Herbert Marcuse. A cursory glance at any paragraph written by Marcuse will set alarm bells ringing for anyone even remotely familiar with the current culture of intolerance on college and university campuses. Consider the following passage from his 1965 essay, Repressive Tolerance. "The small and powerless minorities which struggle against the false consciousness and its beneficiaries must be helped. Their continued existence is more important than the preservation of abused rights and liberties, which grant constitutional powers to those who oppress these minorities. Social justice, feminism, neo-progressivism, and post-colonialism, to name but a few, are all movements inspired by or born out of critical theory, and thus all come under the umbrella of cultural Marxism. Be it gender, sexual orientation, family, race, culture or religion, every aspect of a person's identity is to be questioned, every norm or standard in society challenged, and ideally altered in order to benefit supposedly oppressed groups." Classical Marxism saw class conflict as occurring between the bourgeoisie and the proletariat, between the haves and the have-nots. Cultural Marxism views such a conflict as existing between the oppressed and the oppressors, between those with privilege and those without it. The working class has been replaced by minorities. Majority groups are typically defined as privileged and oppressive, with minority groups accordingly labelled underprivileged and oppressed. Heterosexuals are oppressive. Cisgender people are oppressive. Whites are oppressive, especially white men. Christians are oppressive. Those that do not fit into these groups are thus considered oppressed. It stands to reason, therefore, that if heterosexuals are oppressors, the solution is to encourage other forms of sexuality. If whites are oppressors, the solution is racial diversity. If cisgender people are oppressors, the solution is to encourage transgenderism. If Christians are oppressors, the solution is to propagate Islam. Theodore Adorno, another original member of the Frankfurt School, wrote a book entitled The Authoritarian Personality, in which he defines parenthood, pride in one's family, Christianity, adherence to traditional gender roles and attitudes towards sex, and the love of one's own country as pathological phenomena. This tendency to pathologize opinions and life patterns, which are not in accordance with its own political ends, is characteristic of cultural Marxism. Differing views are thus described as irrational fears or phobias. For example, a person who feels uncomfortable living as a minority in an area dominated by Muslim migrants may be decried as an Islamophobe, since wishing to live amongst those culturally and ethnically similar to oneself is considered sick and phobic. When Pakistani Muslims living in Britain, by contrast, show in-group preference, converting entire sections of a town or city into a mini Pakistan, there is no sickness, no phobia, only multiculturalism.
20 years ago, there were no Pakis here, no one was doing nothing. But now, the Pakis are made a stamp, man, trust, you know what I mean? Now, think 20 years ahead, boy, fuck knows, man, this is going to be Pakistan. Or England, it's going to be Pakistan, man. They're all fucking shipping over.
A popular and propagandist manifestation of cultural Marxism is political correctness, in which media channels and social scientists make it a mandatory exercise to do the following. Question common language. Illegal immigrants, for example, are to be referred to as undocumented migrants, while ethnic discrimination is referred to as affirmative action. Their ambition to define and redefine words can be seen as a means of controlling the discourse and altering cultural norms. Racism and sexism have been redefined as a product of prejudice plus power, which leads to such ridiculous statements as "there's no such thing as sexism against men," and
"I, an ethnic minority woman, cannot be racist or sexist towards white men,"
maintain an unwaveringly favorable view of groups which are marked as being oppressed. Islam is a religion of peace. Black Lives Matter is a peaceful, legitimate protest movement. Feminism is only about equality, and so forth. No deviation from the aforementioned narrative will be entertained, ever, nor will criticism. While communism, as Marx envisioned it, offered the resolution of class conflict in a utopian social system, all that cultural Marxism offers is a desolate form of eternal warfare between ever more narrowly defined groups of offended minorities. The only meaningful consequence that its wide application could possibly ever have is the marginalization of traditional European culture.
The next stage is destabilization. This time, subverter does not care about your ideas and the patterns of your consumption. Whether you eat junk food and get fat and flabby, doesn't matter anymore. This time, and it takes only from 2 to 5 years to destabilize a nation, what matters is essentials. Economy, foreign relations, defense systems. And you can see it quite clearly that in some areas, in such sensitive areas as defense and economy, the influence of Marxist-Leninist ideas in the United States is absolutely fantastic. I could never believe it 14 years ago when I landed in this part of the world that the process will go that fast. The next stage, of course, is crisis. It may take only up to 6 weeks to bring a country to the verge of crisis. You can see it in Central America now. And after crisis, with a violent change of power structure and economy, you have so-called the period of normalization. It may last indefinitely. Normalization is a cynical expression borrowed from Soviet propaganda. When the Soviet tanks moved into Czechoslovakia in 68, Comrade Brezhnev said, "Now the situation in brotherly Czechoslovakia is normalized."
Normalized.
This is what will happen in the United States if you allow all these schmucks to bring the country to crisis, to promise people all kind of goodies and the paradise on earth, to destabilize your economy, to eliminate the principle of free market competition, and to put a big brother government in Washington, D.C.
Now, the next little piece that I'm going to share is from socialismrealized.eu, normalization everyday life. Normalization is the name given to the period in Czechoslovak history that began with the firm seizure of power by politicians loyal to the Soviet Union in the year after the invasion by Warsaw Pact troops in 1968. This period was marked by a strong political stability, mainly represented by Gustav Husák, General Secretary of the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia, and from 1975, also the president. You can see Husák's greeting Soviet delegation and friends from Moscow. Another feature of normalization was paralysis of the public space, in which any politically oriented civic activities that were not in line with the official ideology essentially vanished. Normalization lasted until 1989, by the way. Just to give you an idea, what are we seeing at university campuses? We're seeing conservatives that are actually censored, suppressed, stifled. In what could only be called campus insanity, from campusinsanity.com, conservatives on campus move one step closer to extinction as the intolerant left drives them from the University of Denver. Older Americans, especially leftists, are fond of remembering the turbulent 1960s as a period of cultural and social revolution that involved free speech movements on college and university campuses. And true to form, if you take a serious look at the period, you can definitely find example after example of how college campuses were incubators of free, unconventional, for the time, thought. Some people are trying to draw distinctions between what was happening in the 1960s on college and university campuses to what's going on today. Back then, things were different. Everyone was all into free speech, but that's not the case today. Actually, the mentality on campuses then is the same mentality on campuses today, the left-wing mentality. What's more, leftists who took a blowtorch to American cultural traditions and social norms 50 years ago were just as intolerant as today's current crop of Marxist leftists on campus, and every bit as revolutionary. The truth of the matter is, conservatives and conservative thought are both dying out at American institutes of higher learning. This is the ideological subversion that Yuri was talking about. The ideological coup began a half century ago and is paying dividends in spades today as conservative groups find themselves increasingly under assault by hard left administrators who demand compliance with their Marxist groupthink. Case in point, the harassment has become so pervasive in the University of Denver that conservative groups there, considering disbanding as members, are being increasingly bullied by a left that claims to be against bullying. This is their insanity. As reported by the College Fix, members of two conservative groups at the University of Denver say their organizations are likely disbanding after investigations by the university and pervasive harassment by fellow students have made a campus a toxic environment for their groups. The school's chapter of Young Americans for Freedom debated closing at the end of last year, with its members fearful that they would be unable to land jobs after being investigated for hate speech and labeled racists and white supremacists and other places, the school newspaper. The group remains on campus, but with severely reduced numbers. The Federalist Society there, meanwhile, has dwindled to a single student and is set to shut down at the end of the year when the last remaining member graduates. Fear of being labeled something they're not, racist, bigots, homophobes, fascists, have kept students from joining organizations, according to the report. As usual, the far-left school administration is downplaying concerns and essentially lying about what's really taking place. The website reported that according to the university's PR department, both groups are still active on campus and have events coming up. Right. One member is having an event? Also, what's wrong? That's the wrong answer anyway. The right answer should have been something along the lines of, we are aware of the bullying problems that are preparing, and we are preparing to deal with those who have been found guilty. We are an all-inclusive school that welcomes viewpoints from across the political spectrum. But that's not what they are. The College Fix added as well that students themselves are giving a different version to events than the school. They say the leftist groupthink has permeated every aspect of campus life and, as usual, has become intolerant of anyone who disagrees. One example involves author Ryan Anderson, who was invited to speak at the Federalist Society. His book, When Harry Becomes Sally, Responding to the Transgender Movement, drew such ire from intolerant leftist students that they disrupted his speech, blocked his path as he tried to leave, accosted him, and shouted obscenities. There are others, but this one is typical. In the age of Trump, the left has decided on their own and against reality that he's not legitimate, and so no one supports him is legitimate or should be treated with respect. That's actually an important aspect there. This intolerance and countermanding views will lead to fractional violence at some point. Count on it. Okay, now, folks, this whole thing about Donald Trump, right? And I can make the argument that Donald Trump, by announcing the transgender ban in the military on Twitter, had a shock value effect. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think that people with gender dysphoria with a mental illness should be serving in the military, especially since those in that community have a 40% suicide rate, as opposed to 3% of the rest of the population, which means this is a dysphoria. This is an abnormality, a mental illness. Now, I don't believe these people should be discriminated against or beaten or bullied or anything like that at all. But they're not a marginalized community any more than schizophrenics are a marginalized community. And to pander to a schizophrenic who believes he's Napoleon because he identifies as Napoleon, any psychiatrist worth his salt will tell you that that is not good for the patient, to make them believe that they are something that they are not. So they have embraced this ideology to push it forward as marginalized people as part of this tactic. So, you know, the point that I'm making here is that when you normalize mental illness to the point where there are actually doctors out there that are now going on this little tirade, you see that the very intelligent people, intellectuals, very intelligent people can be indoctrinated with this ideology and carry it forward into their profession. It's very dangerous. So let's hear from a student from Evergreen University and what she has to say, and a little bit more. You know, this is what's going on in college campuses.
Mackenzie Kiger.
My name is Mackenzie, and I'm a current student at Evergreen. My biggest concerns with directly what's been happening this past spring are the lack of viewpoint diversity, and which is one of my biggest concerns, that if you have offer any sort of alternative viewpoint, which I do have, and you're kind of the enemy. I don't agree with the behavior that has been shown on the campus. And unlike what Anne Fischel has said, I think it is important to focus on the way this was handled. I totally understand that people are upset, but I don't think this was handled in the right way at all. And this behavior has actually been encouraged. And because of this, I feel like people are becoming more violent and the campus is becoming more of an unsafe place. I have been to several meetings to speak. I've been told several times that I'm not allowed to speak because I'm white. This school seems to focus so much on race that is actually becoming more racist in a different sort of way. And because I say that, because I choose not to focus on race, I've actually been labeled a racist and a white supremacist. And if anyone took the time to actually know me, it's not true at all. But that's what I've been labeled as. Another issue I have is with the social contract, which people read when they choose to come here, and they agree to it by coming here. There have been so many violations to the social contract in the events that have happened, and it has been completely disregarded. And instead of actually doing something about the fact that it's been violated, we're changing it. And it's a small group working on this with only one viewpoint and not getting alternative viewpoints to help out with revising the social contract. And they're going to change it or revise it, and a lot of people may not agree with that, people who have already agreed to the one that is in that we have currently, and I don't think I agree with that. I have also talked to several legislators and people who work for Senator Patton, and it seems like they don't have a clear understanding of what's going on as well. And from what I have heard from them, it would seem as though George Bridges may not be completely truthful with what's going on here in regards to safety. Because
your time's up.
Okay.
Red Weinstein.
Hi, thank you for this opportunity to speak. I'm a faculty member here. Let me say, I think you probably all know that I've tried...
Your time's up, is what she was told. Your time's up. These universities have absolutely run amok. Now you're hearing from Brett Weinstein.
Reach the board privately so that I could discuss what I believe I know has taken place on this campus with you, not in a public forum, and that has come to nothing, so I find myself talking to you here. I also know people who know you all personally, and I'm told and I believe that you are all well-intentioned and that you have the best interests of the institution at heart. And the problem is that no
one... He can believe that. I don't believe that. I believe that they may think that they are, but they are Marxists.
About you, and knowing what I do about what's taken place here, I'm forced to conclude that you must not fully understand what has happened, because if you did fully understand what has happened, you would be forced to act in the interest of Evergreen. So in that light, I want to just simply pose some questions to you about things that I think you need to know that perhaps you don't. Do you know that the college descended into literal anarchy and that for days the campus was not under the control of the state? It was under the control of protesters. That there were assaults, there were batteries, there was pressure not to report crimes to the police. People were, by the legal definition, I believe, kidnapped and imprisoned. That included faculty members and administrators. Others were hunted on the campus. That lawless bands roamed the campus unimpeded. Police were physically and intentionally blocked by protesters. Police were cruelly, systematically, and personally taunted. They were humiliated and forced to stand down by the president. Students that held different opinions were, by the protesters' own analysis, stalked, harassed, and doxxed, meaning that their names, pictures, and addresses and phone numbers were distributed online. Do you know that concessions made under intimidation and threat during the protest are now being enacted by the college? That includes mandatory bias training for all faculty. This has come about by an agreement between the faculty union, the administration, and protesters. It was not discussed with the faculty. The student code of conduct is now being revised in response to demands by those in violation of that very code. Do you know that although the code of conduct is supposed to protect all of us, that Dr. Bridges decided to selectively suspend it, giving some students license to threaten others based on their participation in the protest? Do you know that the Equity Council, only 25% of which are active faculty, exceeded its charge by proposing a revamp of our college hiring process? That it sought to force the college's acceptance of its sweeping proposal? That it constructed the proposal to limit faculty autonomy? This is by the admission of members of the council within a faculty meeting. and that it wished to avoid discussion with the faculty. That was also admitted in a faculty meeting by a member of the council. Do you know that we as a faculty never discussed the equity proposal? That was despite the clear hazard it poses to the college's ability to remain solvent. Do you know that the equity proposal is predicated on a quantitative analysis that finds equity gaps, but the analysis cannot withstand scrutiny and would likely be considered fraud if presented in a scientific paper? That it was challenged internally and that critics were silenced? Did you say my time is up? That the flawed analysis makes the remedies that have been proposed effectively permanent, and that the council knows this, one of its chairs having said during the rollout that equity at Evergreen cannot be achieved. It must be perpetually pursued. I guess my time's up. Sure.
So what you see now, that was a liberal professor. Remember how Urey said that the left, you know, they would fight amongst these, they'd eat themselves, and I don't mean any disparaging comments. Professor Weinstein and I commend him for standing up against this, because his idea of liberalism, and this is where there's a real conflicting thing with left versus right paradigm here. Okay, I'm taking the left seriously to the woodshed with this. Because this is a far leftist ideology that has that very much like they like to say, you know, the nonviolent Muslims only support the other Muslims by, you know, funding them and goading them and going along with certain things, which, you know, that can be, that's a whole nother subject for another show. But most liberals will not speak out against this extreme Marxist infestation of campuses. And by not doing so, they're perpetuating it. This liberal professor at least had the courage and the audacity and the tenacity to stand up for what was right. By the way, yeah, he was forced out. It became a toxic environment for him. So for those, even of the left persuasion, that stand up against this, they're castigated, they're demonized, they're ostracized. This is a serious problem because, you know, a Marxist United States is not going to work. There will be civil war, and it will give rise to an authoritarian leader. Remember what I was saying about Trump with the tweets, right? I have mixed emotions about Donald Trump and his reactions to all of this stuff, because first of all, a presidential thing would be to take a stand at the podium and say this Marxist subversion into our culture needs to be stopped. It was an inappropriate forum to announce the LGBT or the transgender ban from the military on Twitter. Insightful. You already know these people are going to react, right? So you're only creating a larger divide. Was it the right thing to do? Of course it was the right thing to do. Was it the right way to go about doing it? Of course it was not the right way to go about doing it, which only makes me question. Look, this man is the president of the United States, the diplomat of diplomats. And it makes me wonder, because of this obvious Trotskyite infiltration of the right in the 30s by Crystal, a bunch of Trotskyites that flooded into the Republican Party.
Resurrect the Republic. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the face of the new democracy.
interested in photo ops.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.